We are less than 1 week away from Election Day 2024. Early voting ends tomorrow. Meet the Candidates is your chance to get to know the men and women who would like to represent you, whether that's on the national level in Nashville or in the main local race this time, which is happening in Crossville. We begin with the Tennessee House of Representatives District 25 race, featuring the Republican Cameron Sexton against Democrat Wesley Adkins. Wanting to continue his representation of the Upper Cumberland, Cameron Sexton, one of the candidates, as we meet the candidates. Obviously, the term Speaker of the House comes before your title more often than Representative of the Upper Cumberland. Is it difficult at all to kind of marry those two things and do the things for this region along with handling that role?
No, I mean, look, you still have your duties as state representative. Obviously, I can't be speaker without being state representative first, and so that's the role that comes first and foremost. You know, most of the legislation I pass comes from working with our local veterans, judicial DAs, law enforcement, individuals, senior groups that I still meet throughout the years. You know, that's the role that's first. The speaker role does take up some time, but I think it enhances my role as state representative and what I can do to help our communities back on the plateau.
When you look at the accomplishments over the last term that you've had, is there one thing, one or two things that stand out to you, things that you're most proud of that you've been able to move forward?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot. Working with our DAs and sheriffs about increasing penalties for violent criminals in our state, working to hold juveniles accountable through juvenile blended sentencing and hold them over to adults if they're not doing the things they need to get out of being a career juvenile criminal. I mean, those two are the two that stick out the most, as well as working with the governor and the lieutenant governor and bringing necessary resources back to the city of Monterey for their sports field, or helping Cumberland County's military museum or the courthouse. And so there's a lot of things. You know, one thing doesn't identify you, but you try to help as many people as you can as you're able to serve.
There's obviously a concern right now all across our state about mental health and the impact that we're seeing in so many different ways, from the very young to seniors. Is there more that the state needs to do, or at least examine the opportunities that might be there to help with mental health issues?
Well, we put a lot of money into the mental health safety nets for people who don't have the resources or the money to pay for the mental health for them, for their loved ones. We've also put behavioral health liaisons in the schools to help in those situations. You know, I think what it is mental health has no longer been something that people want to keep in the dark or afraid to talk about. I think there's more conversations and communications about it. About having to deal with it. And it's better for the state and for the families and for that individual to work on it own and not wait until there's an episode when something happens that's tragic or that breaks up a family. And so we're continuing to put resources and a lot of money to that, and working with, like, the behavioral health centers in Cumberland County and Putnam County to make sure that they have what they need to meet the needs of their community.
How concerning related to that is it to you to see the number of school threats that are coming from students very often in our schools and taking up law enforcement time and scaring parents and scaring students, quite honestly?
It's concerning for that reason, but it's also concerning because when you talk to the children, they just say, well, it's just a joke, and it's I don't know if that's them saying that they is a way to get out of it. It's just a joke. I didn't mean anything by it. But what they need to understand is we passed laws this last year for a mass threat and made it a felony. So we're very serious, whether you're a juvenile or adult who makes any kind of mass threats to society or to schools. It will not be tolerated. And the other aspect is when I talk to sheriffs all across this great state of ours, and I say, you know, what did the kids say? That's what the kids say. Then I say, well, tell me about the parents. Parents say, well, they didn't mean anything by it. And so I think there's part of it in the family unit that needs to be a little bit more accountable. I know if the law enforcement came and knocked on my door when I was 12 years old and I did something like that, I don't think my parents would just tell them it was a joke, don't worry about it. I think my behind would have been bruised and I would have been grounded and a lot of other things would have happened to me. And so we need to get over this, people who are seeking recognition, trying to potentially harm people or have a threat to harm people.
Cameron Sexton is looking for your vote as we head to the polls here in the next few days. Education, let's stay there for a moment and talk about TESA and the investment that the state has made in education in our state. Do you feel like that has been a good move?
It has. Listen, the state over the last several years has invested over $2 billion of new state money. That's not even federal money. That's new state money into education. And so we've been making the investment. I think what we have been talking about is trying to get more teaching time in the classroom with a little bit more decrease in testing, and spend more time teaching. But we also know that in the third grade that our reading comprehension and math comprehension is nowhere near what it needs to be. And so we've been working through those scenarios as well, knowing that that's the pinnacle of success as far as where they, when they score, that's the highest point. It only drops from there. So it's very important for us to make sure that in third grade that the kids know how to read, but not just read, but to comprehend what they read and understand math. And then on top of it is you have a lot of parents for one reason or another who that school system may not be the best for them or the best for their child. It may not be academic. It may be a totally different issue. And so allowing the parents to be in control of their education dollars, their hard-earning taxpayer dollars, and allowing them to have the opportunity to use them that best fits the needs of their child through school choice or charter school or stay in public school is the direction I think that we need to go. We need to allow the parents to make the best decision for their child.
Do you believe school choice will move forward in the next term?
It'll be back up again. We're currently working on some policy issues. The governor's working on some policy issues. Look, at the end of the day, it's not about saying that public schools are bad. It's not about defunding public schools. It's about giving parents alternatives. And if they think there's something else that might fit their child better, we should give it to them. The problem we have right now is if you have the resources or the money, you have the capability to do whatever you want to do. But if you don't have the resources and you don't have the money, even though it's your taxpaying dollars, you're being sentenced to a school system that you may feel like that's not best for your child. All we're saying is it's your tax dollars. If that's not the best place for your child at that particular time, should you have access to something else?
On the other end, the investment that has been made in the TCAT system, the investment that's been made in our universities, including Tennessee Tech, over the last several years, how do you feel about the investment in workforce and higher education?
I mean, we're building new TCATs. Governor Lee has made that a linchpin of his term here. Over the last 6 years, we put $1.5 billion into building new TCATs all across our state. There's whether it's breaking ground in the new one in Livingston this week or Crossville for CDL trucking or the new one in Pikeville or all over the state, is trying to have people who, first and foremost, as we said, have the skills and aptitude when they finish high school to go on to a TCAT or at the same time go to the TCAT to get a skill or certificate that when they graduate, they have a job and they make very good money. And so the investment that we're making is to help our rural communities to make sure that the people who want to live in rural communities has a certificate or a skill or a job to stay. Unfortunately, a lot of times we hear before Governor Lee came into office, there's nothing here in this rural community that keeps me here. There's not many jobs here. There's not many opportunities here. And so trying to do more vocational type of schools and skills in the rural communities will allow us to build our workforce in those communities.
This state continues to grow in a lot of places, Nashville's obvious, but then you look around the upper Cumberland and you see the amount of growth. Whether it's TDOT, whether it's water and sewer infrastructure, whether it's, you know, more state parks, which is part of growth. Cameron, can the state keep up with the amount of growth that we're seeing right now?
We right now we are. We're able to keep up with it. Some parts of our state aren't. Rutherford County has growth, but it's high growth. They're in the 20 percentile. So the state and the locals can handle a certain level of growth. But when you get to the level of 20 to 25% growth for consecutive years, it becomes very hard. And so we're hoping to have manageable growth, as well as we continue to budget. What we've done very well is not use our recurring dollars or money that comes back every year for more recurring expenses, but for one-time expenses. That's where we've invested into the county road system. That's where we invested in the TCAT. That's where we invested in the water and sewer grants. So we're going to continue to look at that. That's where we've invested with TDOT. And TDOT, this year we came out with, or a couple years ago, with the Modernization Act, which allows us to have choice lanes, new choice lanes, nothing that's existing, to help us continue to fight the congestion on our interstates while we, as a state, invest into the rural parts of our community so that we have adequate roads to handle that. And so it's a daunting task, but when you're a successful state, when your state is seen as a state that's a beacon of freedom, people are wanting to move here. And so, you know, our success has caused us to have growth, and we're going to continue to hope to have growth because that means better jobs, better high-paying jobs, better opportunities for our people. And we're going to continue to move in that route and continue to invest in the infrastructure as well.
Cameron Sexton, wanting your vote for state representative. Thanks for spending some time with us, Cameron.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us for Meet the Candidates. We turn our attention now to the Tennessee 16th Senate District. It includes Warren and DeKalb counties. A total of three candidates will be on the ballot when you head to the polls next week. That includes Independent Scott Bean, Republican Janice Bowling, and Democrat Wayne Steele. Wayne, thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Why did you decide to run?
The Democrats had not found another candidate. I have a background in healthcare for about 15, 16 years, something like that. And I just saw the issues that need to be taken care of in the state of Tennessee in District 16, and believe that I have the experience to handle that.
As someone who has spent their career in healthcare, how much does that influence you in terms of the things you find important, the things that you think maybe state government should work on? How does it influence you?
I think it influences everything I think about because I look at it from a standpoint of also a patient. My mother had, speaking of, you know, women's health care, my mother had endometriosis that grew into her lung. It nearly killed her when I was 9. I watched her on a ventilator. I personally have PTSD, civilian PTSD, so I've seen the mental health side of it and had a year's worth of intensive treatment out in New Mexico and Arizona, and looking at their model compared to ours, they have better health outcomes and they have better suicide prevention, but they've also expanded Medicaid to help lower income people, and they, you know, people with poverty or in poverty, they get less treatment and they get less help and they're more prone to trauma in that way.
You would be serving a very large district. I mean, District 16 really stretches all the way really from Putnam County down to the Alabama line. How does one try to effectively serve that big a space?
It's all a rural area. I know that, you know, Winchester, Tullahoma, Manchester is kind of a micropolitan, as they call it. I grew up in a rural area. I grew up living next to a farm of a World War II veteran that sort of became my third set of grandparents and his wife. The majority of the district, like I said, is rural. So I've had the ear of both Republican and Democratic rural voters my entire life. and you have to make a point of going to every county and learning what the issues are individually. And I have that personality that I can talk to anyone. I can break bread with anyone. I haven't been one of those Democrats or Republicans who cut the opposite party out of their life. I just don't agree with that.
What do you hear from people as you're out, trying to get people to vote for you and talking to people, meeting people? What are the things that they're talking about?
Obviously, the price of food, the inaccessibility to health care with rural hospitals closing. For instance, if Huntsville Hospital had not either purchased or vested into our hospital here in Lincoln County, Fayetteville, it's a possibility it would have went under like so many others have. They're talking about, even though I have to remind people that I'm running on the state level, they always bring up federal issues. They're talking about women's health care, abortion, protecting women's health, but also the age of our president. And I called for when I ran 2 years ago for Joe Biden not to run again as president. And they're still talking about the age of the candidates now that it's shifted to Donald Trump being the oldest candidate to run for president. And that we ought to have an upper age limit. I get that comment from people 60 years and older more than anyone.
One of the things that has been on the agenda over the last year or so is just how much Nashville is involved in local government. And in one hand, Nashville is saying, we need to keep Washington out of our politics. But a lot of local leaders say, hey, maybe we need to keep Nashville out of our business. How do you come down on that?
Well, I agree. For someone who is a Democrat, it may sound funny, but I'm a small government Democrat. When it comes either way, Nashville coming down on Davidson and Shelby counties, which of course is out of my district, but it's kind of an overreaching of power by Nashville. If we say small government, then it ought to be at every level. And not to say that I'm for small government as in cutting Medicaid or Medicare or Social Security. Those should all be protected and honestly expanded. If it's about regulation on certain things, then it can be really burdensome on the local government. On the other hand, we need to be, the legislature in Nashville needs to be protecting farmers and protecting business and protecting people's pockets, especially the middle class. And so there just needs to be a balance.
Wayne Steele is a candidate for State Senate, District 16. Speaking of Nashville and Memphis and Knoxville, how important is it to you to make sure that rural communities like the ones that you would serve in District 16, to make sure that they have a voice?
That's a really good question, and I think I have to start from the premise that I'm a Democrat that's willing to call out my own party. That seems to be something that we have trouble with the other side, Republicans calling out their own party when they're taking the wrong action. I've called out the Democratic Party for not investing in their rural candidates. Whenever they don't, then it says that they don't care about rural people. They forget that there are Democrats and progressives out here in the rural areas. There are rural black farmers, and there are rural LGBT farmers, and there are rural women who think differently than in our urban suburban areas. I think it would be abdicating in every aspect, because there is such a different way of life that's slower and more methodical and more thoughtful than sometimes in our urban areas of the cities you listed.
Finally, Wayne, if someone is going to the ballot box and your name is there, why should they cast their ballot for you?
It's been said so much. I know people who listen to national politics have been talking about turning the page on hypocrisy, turning the page on really the older leadership. I hate to bring up age, but since constituents have brought it up, it feels like a territory that can be spoken of. We have so many of a certain age who have been in the state legislature, federal legislature, you know, county commissions, and aldermen who have been there 30, 40, 50 years. And I know Miss, Senator Bowling has not. She's been there, I think, 12 or 16 years, I forget which. But yeah, it's just time to turn the page on a new generation of leadership. And we have to stand up and take that mantle and take that torch.
Wayne Steele, Democratic candidate for Tennessee State Senate in District 16. Thank you so much for running, and thanks for spending some time with us.
I appreciate all of the meeting of the candidates. I think it's a good way to protect the First Amendment when it comes to freedom of speech and the media. So I appreciate you as well.
Senator Janice Bowling refused to participate in Meet the Candidates. Don't forget that early voting ends tomorrow across the Upper Cumberland as we move toward Election Day, and full election coverage Tuesday night on News Talk 94.1, as well as across our stations. We hope you'll be with us. Now let's turn our attention to the Tennessee House race in District 41. The Democrat, Joel Derek Hahn, running against the incumbent, Republican Ed Butler. We're giving you the chance to meet the candidates who would like to serve you, whether it's in Washington, D.C., whether it's here at home, or whether it's in Nashville. Ed Butler is one of those who is running in the Tennessee State Representative race. Ed, I know it's hard to point it down to one or two things, but what was your first term? What learning did you take from that?
Well, you know, first term, you're always trying to learn how the process works and learning how things function and what you have to do to carry legislation or file legislation or all those types of things. So it's been a great experience. I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed being able to help people. Probably one of the most satisfying things in the job, and I know legislation is part of our job, but probably our primary focus and our main purpose is to serve our constituents and help them solve problems as it relates to any type of state issues. And you know, there's been some really, really satisfying, for me at least, constituent issues we've been able to help some folks solve, adoptions and some of those kinds of things that are really near and dear to me, that have meant a lot to be able to help somebody with.
When you look at the counties that are part of District 41, there are a lot of similarities. I'm curious, do you spend part of your term, first term, kind of learning the differences between the counties and the things they're interested in?
Well, you know, you started learning that just going from each county and each little community. So I've better learned it now that, you know, I'm in the elected position. But when you start going out and meeting people in the different communities, you start learning about those individual communities. And most of the District 41 is very rural. And so you have a lot of very small communities that are very close-knit and willing to always help one another.
As you talk to people, are there things that you keep hearing over and over again that they're concerned about as it relates to government?
Some of the smaller communities have their own concerns themselves about issues that pertain specifically to them. But I think there's a big concern right now with immigration and some of those types of things. That's more on a federal level, and this, you know, the state's taken some steps in the right direction to help address that. But that seems to be a pretty good concern across the district.
The economy is obviously a concern for all of us. Tennessee has weathered this economic, I don't know if you call it a downturn or, whatever adjective you want to put on it, this economic situation of the last 2 years very well. How important is that fiscal conservative approach to spending? How important is that to our way of doing things in this state?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I'll go to the folks that are over in East Tennessee with our disasters from Hurricane Helene. And Tennessee is in a position where we don't borrow money for infrastructure and those types of things. And so Tennessee has a rainy day fund, as it's commonly referred to make the necessary repairs and provide the resources that are needed over there to get people where they can continue to travel and build roads back and so forth. And I think the fact that we have been fiscally conservative long before I was ever in office as a state pays off dividends when we have disasters and we have situations where FEMA may cover a portion of that cost, and that's very helpful. But the state still has to come up with a portion of that money, and we are in a position to be able to pay cash for that again.
And so rebuilding roads, you know, helping with damage, those sorts of things, the state can basically write the check right then.
That's basically correct. You know, and I don't know, it depends on lots of variables, but you know, there's FEMA money that comes into play, and then the state has to come up with their portion. Well, we can come up with that portion in cash. And I think that's good for Tennesseans. It doesn't put us into debt, and you know, there's water treatment plants and there's bridges and roads and so forth that have been damaged and in some instances completely destroyed. And so it takes time to build back, but we have the money basically in the bank, so to speak, to do that.
One of the areas where the state has invested significant money in the last several years is increased money to help with education across the communities. Are you seeing results from the money that the state has invested? Are you seeing some good progress being made?
Well, we're very fortunate in this district with the smaller counties, more rural counties, and I do have some larger counties that I have portions of, but specifically Overton and Fentress and Morgan counties. They're fairly small counties in relationship to some of those. And our school systems, I don't think we face some of the same challenges that they do in the larger areas. We have good teachers. You know, the students go to church or they see their teachers at the store, at the grocery, and so forth. And so I don't think we have as many challenges that they do in some of the larger counties because we are small. And there's pros and cons to both things, but I like the smaller community personally. I like the rural areas.
There's a lot of discussion across our state right now about mental health needs. And are we doing enough, not just as a state, but as a community, to make sure that people's mental health needs are taken care of? Do you think the state is going to have to do more?
Well, the state has been looking into some mental health facilities. Because I think that's one thing that we are lacking. And there are some mental health facilities out there, but most of them are at capacity or they cannot take any more, they can't provide any more services. So there has been some investigation into what we could do to help with mental health. And so that's probably going to be something that will come up in the coming session. To continue to look at and what can we do as a state to help our local resources address the mental health issues.
Ed Butler, representative in District 41, looking for your vote as we head to the polls. The community is growing. The Upper Cumberland is growing. The state overall is growing. How much do you see the call for more money into infrastructure, whether it's TDOT, whether it's water and sewer? Is that going to continue people wanting us to put more money into those things?
Well, I think that's something we're going to have to continue to work on because with the growth that we have, and I believe Fentress County, for instance, is the fastest growing county that I represent or a portion of a county. And so building roads and putting water lines in and infrastructure and bridges and so forth is going to continue to be a challenge. And as fast as we're growing, you know, you have Rutherford County, for example, that's one of the fastest growing counties we have in the state, and they can't keep up. They can't build the infrastructure fast enough to meet the growth. And so those challenges not only strain the local governments, but it also strains the state government in just trying to keep up. And so I think we're going to have to continue to be vigilant and continue to make investments in infrastructure to keep up with that.
And Ed, to that point, there are certainly enough needs in if you just took Nashville and Williamson County and Rutherford County and did the infrastructure there, you could spend a lot of state money in a drop of a hat. How important is it, and the governor seems to be leading this, that we've also got to keep the rural communities and their infrastructure at the top of our mind?
Well, and when the Transportation Modernization Act was passed a year or so ago, I made it clear that we need to continue to make sure that we make investments in rural communities, because that rural infrastructure is critical for us, the rural folks, to have access in and out of those rural communities. And so I don't want the rural areas to be forgotten. And I'll continue to advocate for the rural areas. I mean, I still have two highways, Highway 62 in Morgan County, from Wartburg to Oliver Springs. It needs to be four-laned. And, of course, Highway 127 from Clark Range to Jamestown needs to be four-laned. And I know they're in the process of bringing 127 to four lanes from the interstate up to Clark Range right now, and that process is still under construction and probably will be for a little bit longer. But I think we need to continue to focus on those rural areas and bringing that infrastructure in there so that people can get in and out of those areas.
And those areas are important, but you also, I think, understand the importance of, for example, the I-40 corridor between Cumberland County and Putnam County, of making sure that it's able to help those rural communities as well.
That is correct, and I know the putting three lanes going up I-40 up Monterey Mountain is on the list, and that needs to be done. I mean, if you drive I-40 east or west, the amount of traffic that's on I-40, I don't know what the specific numbers are off the top of my head, but the traffic has increased tremendously over the last 4 or 5 years. It doesn't matter what section of I-40 you're on. So Tennessee is growing, and I-40 is a main corridor across the United States. And so we're going to have to continue to focus on I-40 and the main arteries in order to be able to extend the secondary and sometimes third and fourth level roads. We're going to have to continue to focus on those.
Finally, Ed Butler, what would you say to a voter who's heading to the ballot box to cast their vote? Why should they vote for you?
Well, I think that the legislation that I've carried and my focus on adoption and children and those types of things speak to where my heart is in foster care. And I would ask for your vote. And I think you can look at the things that I've been focused on and see where my heart is, and know that my focus is on helping our children and hopefully improving the services that our children do get. And so I would humbly ask for your vote.
District 41, which includes Overton, Fentress County, among others, Representative Ed Butler, our Meet the Candidates guest. Thank you, Ed, for the time. Democratic candidate Joel Hahn did not return our phone calls. The main local race on the Meet the Candidates agenda, the race for Crossville City Council, where two seats are up for grabs. Six candidates are running, including former mayors James Mayberry and J.H. Graham III. Incumbent Rob Harrison, also a candidate. Danny Wyatt, Dr. Mark Fox, and today's guest. This is your chance to meet the candidates who would like to represent you as we head to the polls on November 5th. One of those is Christopher Cole. He's a candidate for Crossville City Council. Christopher, thanks for spending some time with us.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, Larry.
Why did you decide you wanted to run for council?
Well, I've known for a long time that I was going to get involved in politics, not because I wanted to. I guess you could just say it was a sense of responsibility. But as I've been praying, I was led to get involved this year, especially in the city, because just at looking at the issues that we were facing, just even as regular residents of Crossville, got me to go and start looking into running. And after I did, now seeing how the whole process works, I actually realized we have great people that are working on it now. It's just, it's a lot of work and there's a lot of different steps involved. So it started off as a sense to serve the community, and then now has evolved into me knowing that I have the ability to serve the community and just looking forward to doing that.
Is it an experience? Is the experience what you imagined it would be, or has it been different? Has it been better, worse? How would you grade it so far?
It's been much better, but it's exactly what I thought it would be. I knew that it would be more than I could imagine from being outside of the entire situation. But after I've been getting involved, it's been great. The support, the encouragement, the excitement that everybody has been great. As far as what it takes to do everything, actually, I would say it is even more than I would have expected just from, because a lot of the biggest job the city council does is just the maintenance of the entire city. So every little small detail that even I took for granted has multiple steps it has to go through, and it has to go through very quickly for them to continue to keep things going. So there's a whole lot involved. However, it's like a well-oiled machine up here. So it's exciting because I know all of the resources needed to be successful are already set in place, and just being able to go and add my expertise, but especially the hard work, because that's the biggest part of the job, is going to fit right in.
What expertise do you bring? What's your background?
Right now I have a small business where primarily dealing lately in home renovation, but also repair. So anything you can think of that has to relate to a house or a yard or anything like that, like doing repairs. So I'm having to continuously look at every single different system that contributes to a home, from foundation, framing, electrical, flooring, AC, everything like that. And usually have to do repairs on one or the other. However, to do any major repairs on any individual thing, whether it's water or electrical or plumbing or anything like that, you have to know every single detail of the house and how every individual system works together. So you have to look at how each individual system works from beginning to end separately, as well as how they work together, so you know what affects what can cause one thing to break down, and what if one fails, how does that affect the other. And the biggest way that it contributes over to the city council is the amount of small details that you have to go in and learn about and know and take into consideration every single step of the way, because you can't leave a single thing out. And the process they have to go through to look into new issues and also the existing issues and then find a solution, come up with a plan of action, taking every single individual aspect into account, is what I do every single day.
There's also the part of owning your own business that you have to examine revenue and say, okay, can we afford this, or does this need to wait? I'm curious how you kind of tackle those types of fiscal decisions of whether or not to move on something or to wait or to make an investment that's more long-term in nature.
Yeah, I mean, you said it best, really. And the way that I do it is just going off of simple logic and reasoning. Like, sometimes something has to be taken care of, no matter the cost. It's detrimental if it's not handled. And those take the first priority. Anything else after that, if there's something that is important, that if we don't cover it now, a smaller cost now, even if it is kind of tight on the budget, if it's going to cause a blowout on the next year's budget or the year after that, then that also takes priority. And that's pretty much it, just making a prioritizing a list of importance, necessity, risk of not taking care of something, or how you can preemptively take care of an issue, and then making sure to separate the wants and desires from the actual needs.
Christopher Cole is one of the candidates for Crossville City Council. As you address the needs of Crossville right now, obviously the entire Upper Cumberland is in a growth spurt. How is Crossville dealing with the growth?
Really good, all things considered. There was no real way to expect the kind of growth that we got after COVID and everybody got reshifted around in America. The good news for Crossville is it's bringing in a lot of new opportunities. If not handled well, that could also be the bad news. That's bringing in a lot of new opportunities, because the infrastructure here the main part of Crossville all goes down what we call Main Street, but is 127. So figuring out a way to solve our issues, like as far as traffic and the flow of people getting out of town, is difficult because we can't change 127 because it's a state road. But other than that, like having to sort out the traffic issues, Crossville's managing it very well, especially the people up here at City Council. I've been incredibly impressed that every single issue, they're already ahead of it and looking at it. There's still a lot of challenges that they're facing, but they've got the best people that they can get on it that are addressing it right now. And they're still continuously looking for solutions to the bigger problems while maintaining the regular way of life that we need.
Back to your point, though, the infrastructure, the most visible thing that we all see and think about is roads, and that's important. But there's been a lot of talk in the recent city council meetings about sewer and water infrastructure and making sure that the city is prepared in that avenue. That's not as glamorous, but it's all a part of the equation.
Right. That's actually really a bigger issue than the roads. The roads, I mean, even though, because we're all used to, especially people have been here for a long time, like the small town, we're not used to like a lot of backed up congested traffic. So to us, it looks way worse than it is from anybody who's been around an area with much more traffic. Even Cookeville traffic, it is not bad. But the water and sewage, that's the issues that we're facing that are really we are addressing it now, but it really needs to be sorted out much sooner than later. And if it's not, that could actually be one of the most detrimental things to Crossville. So that's probably the top priority that needs to be addressed, honestly.
As you talk to people, what are the things on their mind? What do they want to make sure is heard and addressed?
The main things that I've been getting from people, I've got a lot of small, different solutions that they want put in place. Like they want a red light over at our post office and smaller things like that, like different traffic or more traffic signs and a couple different stoplights and stuff. But the biggest thing that I've come across is people talking about more social issues, such as the relationship between the citizens and the local law enforcement, not in a negative way, but something to be definitely addressed and see if we can improve, is just the personal relationship between the residents and the law enforcement, as well as the social issues with as far as like mental health for the children, for all the kids in school.
Christopher, why should somebody cast one of their ballots for council in your direction?
Well, I will say that all of the candidates running, I'm impressed with all of them. So no matter who we get, we'll be great. But as far as for me, I'm working hard every day, and I actually look forward to being able to work really, really hard for the city council, working towards these solutions. I'm the youngest candidate by, I believe, at least half of everybody else's age. So everything that we're facing, I'm facing it the same as everybody else. But looking at the longevity, like the next 40, 50, 60 years, is something I have to take serious. I have all the skills and ability. However, I will be learning a whole new set of skills and abilities working up here at City Hall. And you'll be investing in somebody that's going to be working for your future for a long time.
Christopher Cole, one of the candidates for Crossville City Council, as we go to vote. Thanks for the time today.
Thank you, Larry.
Upper Cumberland residents will also be casting ballots next week for president, of course, as well as the chance to represent Tennessee in the U.S. Senate. Marsha Blackburn is the Republican nominee, going against Gloria Johnson, the Democratic Party nominee. Theron Chandler is running as an independent. So is Pamela Moses and Hastina Robinson, also an independent in the U.S. Senate race. Tomorrow, we look at the House Race 25 and District Race 42 as part of our Meet the Candidates discussions. We hope you'll be with us. And don't forget, full election coverage Tuesday night on News Talk 94.1 AM 1600.